This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. Discover the future of trading with IBKR Desktop, Interactive Brokers' next-generation trading platform. Built from the ground up, IBKR Desktop combines powerful features with a unique set of groundbreaking trading tools in a streamlined, intuitive interface. With access to over 150 markets, IBKR Desktop puts global stocks, options, futures, currencies, bonds, and funds at your fingertips. IBKR Desktop includes innovative features like multi-sort, which lets you sort data using multiple factors simultaneously. And that helps you quickly identify trading opportunities. And they have something called the Option Lattice, which visually highlights key metrics for smarter decisions. Now, whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, IBKR Desktop redefines what traders can expect from a trading platform. Experience the future of trading today. And whether you're located in the U.S., Australia, or even Germany, you'll be amazed with the power of IBKR Desktop. Download IBKR Desktop at IBKR.com/desktop. Interactive Brokers is a member SIPC.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
April ends with a thud. Oil prices come in, yields hold near recent highs. And we got a flip-flopping Fed, and maybe, perhaps, kind of, sort of, maybe we'll see is the talk by Powell. And our guest this week, Teja Morotovic, co-founder of Seasonex. All this and much more on episode number 867 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And let's say hello to May. What do they say again? What is that word? What is that phrase? Oh, it's very famous. Sell in May and go away. Like the Santa rally, right? The January effect. There's December to remember. All these, which are things related to seasonal occurrences, and something that we're going to bring up with our guest today, as she is all about seasonality and the seasonal trends and some interesting things that we see on a regular basis, but it's difficult to identify. Well, her company does identify that, so we're going to get into that. I'm always interested in seasonality because it's pretty powerful. You could see some things that, to the plain naked eye, seem to make sense, that every year at this time, look at that, how does that happen? But in fact, when we put the computer power behind it and get the number crunching going, sometimes we find that it's really nothing more than a blip that doesn't really hold anything. But then there are those that are invisible under the surface that can be discovered, and we're going to get to that. And as it turns out, April, not such a good month for U.S. equities. In fact, I thought we'd start the show taking a look at a little review of what happened in April. I got my market update that we provide and we send out to our clients. And let me tell you where we are. First of all, I think it's important to recognize that it was a month that U.S. equities in general underperformed. I think that's something to think about. The second thing is that there was actually a real resurgence in the areas around the world that have been, I would say, really left for dead, like the emerging markets, like what we saw in China. So equity snapshot right now, let's look at that. We're talking about small cap stocks on the growth side. Growth was worse than value for the month, generally speaking. Down 7.21%. The small cap Russell 2000 growth side was down. So the small technology down about 7.2%. Mid cap down 5.11%. And large cap growth down 4.21%. Now the value side of it, which is the energy, the banks and things of that nature, utilities, didn't fare well either, but the value was ever so slightly better than growth, 3.97 to the downside. And the small cap on the value side, down 6% versus 7.21 on the growth side. So that's number one. The second thing is when we look at things like asset classes. Well, global stocks ex-US were down 1.8%. You can see that's a lot better than we saw in the US. And then on top of that, global bonds down 2.5, US bonds down 2.53, US stocks down 4.4 on average, and US real estate, the worst hit of all of them, down 8.2% due to its interest rate sensitivity. Now, regionally, emerging markets performed the best, up almost 0.5% for the month. Asia Pacific still down 1.42%, and Latin America down 3.5%. Generally speaking, when we look at what's going on year to date, large growth, the big cap tech names up 6.25% through the end of April, large blend up 5.8%, value 5.4%. They're pretty good. Small caps still suffering. Small caps in general up modestly, you know, like somewhere about 0.5% for the year. Big differential. Obviously, everybody wants to be in the large caps. The big names are dominating very significantly what is going on. And then that's important to understand. Utilities, something that I've talked about with John C. Dvorak on DH Unplugged. We talked about that this week. It talked about utilities are pretty interesting. It's something I'm looking at right now insofar as when you look at the things that are going on, the requirement for electricity, and really, when you look at the number crunching that's going on with all this AI and all the things that are happening and the need for many of these mega gigantic, I don't know what we're going to call them, giga facilities, something like that. Well, the energy use is tremendous. The drain on the infrastructure and the grid, dramatic, whether it's going to be through standard electricity, that generation, traditional, or even, you know, going back to mini or regular nuclear, something has to be done here because we're not going to have enough. So the energy generation, where does that happen? Where does the sale go through? Well, that's utilities. Not to mention, many of them have 3-5% yields, and they're very sensitive to interest rates. Well, utilities were up 1.66% for last month. Very interesting. Energy was up down 0.94. Technology down 5.76. Cyclicals 4.5%. Now, technology still holds the major weight in the S&P 500, 30%, which is far and away much bigger than any other sector. So even if utilities do come up dramatically, they only hold about 2.3% position in the market cap weighted S&P 500 index. So something to think about, just some returns from last period. And I guess we could talk about why that is. What happened there? You know, what's the reasoning that's happening? And things are probably too good, and that's an issue. Right now we saw that, generally speaking, when we look at the economics and whether it's PPI, CPI, PCE, we look at the productivity numbers, we look at the prices paid inside of any of the regional manufacturing surveys, PMIs, and we look at Philly Fed or New York or any you know, Midwest, everything shows that there is a significant amount of overall price hikes going on. And that's kind of something we need to really deal with. The fact is that the Fed is really in a bind right now. And even though the fact is that we talked about this, the better things are, the more the Fed has not wanted to cut. But interestingly enough, the Fed, who never talks about future cuts, by the way, for whatever reason, Powell last week said that he felt compelled to talk about how, he doesn't see any hikes in the future. I guess, once again, trying to calm markets. Worked for a minute on Wednesday, and then markets popped back on Thursday, and then we obviously went into what happened on Friday with the jobs numbers. But although the big issue here is the Fed. And I was talking with Frank Curzio this week, and we discussed that outlook. We talked about how, you know, where the Fed is, and I think we both agreed that there's nothing in the latest data that suggests any real reason to cut rates anytime soon. I think logically we can look at that. I mean, emotionally, like, yeah, give me the rate cut, man. But the fact is that I don't think data dependency would allow us to move over into the idea that rate cuts should be happening. And I think what we talked about, and we also both agreed with, was that the misstep, again, the mistake by the Fed claiming victory on inflation last year was something that was really a very poor decision. Because essentially what that did was it allowed people to believe that interest rates were coming down and therefore they should maybe do something like buy a home. And when they buy that home, they're going to pay, let's say, 8%, and that's too much. They can't afford it. But you know what? Don't worry about it. Let's buy it. Listen, rates are coming down. They said they're going to. We'll just refinance. And we saw that the Case-Shiller number, 7.8% on a year-over-year basis, housing prices aren't really coming down that fast. And now that we're in the throes of earnings season, we're finally starting to see something that has been a worry of mine for a while, and the concern about things like margin compression. With higher rates and higher costs and higher everything, yes, the opportunity to push up prices, but when we saw what happened with McDonald's and Starbucks, both complaining about items related to geopolitical issues and the higher cost of labors and goods, Starbucks was absolutely miserable. You know, you saw what happened. Stock was down midweek like 12, 14%, one of the worst days in years for Starbucks. And the question is whether we're going to start to see that really be much more impactful for many companies that are out there. And the question you have to really wonder is, how long can we continue to have price escalation and keep those margins at the levels they are for most companies out there? Throw the technology out there. That's a whole different discussion. That's what's obviously pushing and moving the NASDAQ so much and the S&P 500, the big market cap weighted indices. Forget that. Push that aside. The question we have to know and ask is, well, are other companies suffering because people are buying down and slowing down their purchases and not willing to pay $18 for the Big Mac meal or whatever it is, right? $4.50 for a burnt cup of coffee. So those are the things that we're really focusing on right now. And as we're on this subject, I talked about this earlier about the utilities. This is an idea that I've been forming for some time. I mean, call me crazy because this is a stock sector that's usually underloved. It's not sexy. It's not cool. It's not growth. It's not even nearly growth. It's steady eddy for the most part. But two reasons I'm warming up to some of these names in the universe. One is, again, rates could be peaking. If in fact we are seeing that rates, now, if we start getting hyperinflation like we talked about with John Williams last week on last week's show, if you haven't listened to that episode 866, well, if we don't get that, which I'm hard-pressed to believe we're really going to get that, I think we're just going to have a period of time that is going to be a problem. But if we don't get that and rates kind of stay around this area, maybe tick up on the 10-year to 4.8%, possibly even as high as 5, remember something. Utilities are very sensitive to the rate environment that's out there because they usually have a traditional yield. And you're just like bonds, they'll move with that. The second thing is grids power use is going up massively. So the utility names like NextEra, Southern Companies, Exelon, Eaton, CMS Energy. Think about the need for power, electricity for all the AI-related data warehouses and all these providers. I mean, we know that they suck a huge amount of energy, and it could be interesting to see how this is dealt with. Could be really big for them. These are total picks in the shovel, inside the picks and shovel play, right? You could look at that as that. And when we look at a few of these and note that they're very reactive to rates because, again, they yield anywhere 3, 4, 5%. The lower rates benefit their share price if, in fact, we see that come in. So the lower rates come in, it's good. So if you think long-term that we need additional energy, again, energy from one type of thing or another or one way or another, coal, nuclear, traditional, and utilities will furnish that, let's put a check in that box. And if we look at rates and think they're close to peaking, then these are priced at low point potential of the yield cycle. Something to consider, something to think about as part of the portfolio right now, particularly those of you who are a little bit older. You can find some really good names in there, and some of them were shot to hell recently with all the rates that went on. Some of them came back pretty nicely. They're starting to break out again, and that is with rates still at the 4.6, 4.5, 4.7, that range. Utilities are starting to come back again, and I think there's something that the price in the chart is telling us that people are looking for two things. One, a little bit of safety play right now, an alternative to the higher PE multiple stocks. the opportunity for them to make a lot of money from this energy usage. And the truth is that if rates come down, could be very good for them. Let's take a moment to break before we get to our guests. Talk about Interactive Brokers, because they have key, just there's so many good things I could talk about, but let's talk about their key competitive advantages for sophisticated investors like you. Interactive Brokers charges U.S. margin loan rates in USD from 5.83% to 6.83%. And they're rated the lowest margin fees by stockbrokers.com. Their clients can earn extra income also by lending their fully paid shares of stock. Join Interactive Brokers clients from over 200 countries around the world and territories as well to invest in stocks, options, futures, funds on 150 global markets. Think about that, right? You could do all your work in one account in all sorts of markets. Rates, of course, are subject to change. This is what we know. The best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare. So with that, let's get to our guest. And this week, it's Teja Moratovic. And she's a co-founder of Season Action, develops an award-winning analytical tool that identifies promising trading opportunities across 25,000 stocks, commodities, indices, and currencies. Actually, you can find all that at seasonax.com. That's SEASONAX.com. We'll have that on the show notes as well. And she's been involved in entrepreneurship management and has earned her multiple awards. And she also received the Female Austrian Investor Award in 2019 and recognition from esteemed industry and experts on that one. And she has lots of achievements in all sorts of areas. The UK Women in FinTech Power List on three different occasions. And she's contributed numerous articles to all sorts of places like Bloomberg, Institutional Money, Talk Markets, FX Empire, and the like. And we're very happy to have her back on because she was on once or twice before, but that was a few years ago, Teja, right?
Yeah, it goes a long way back. Good afternoon, everyone.
Oh, thanks for being here. So I thought we would talk about and start our discussion today about just background. I've been asking people lately, you know, let's find out a little bit more about the people we're talking to. So tell me a little bit about your early days, how you started, maybe even just up before you even got interested in this area, and how, so what's your, first of all, career path? Let's talk about that. Give me your background and how you got interested in finance.
Actually, I studied finance many, many years back, and I studied in Vienna in Austria, so my company is also now based in Europe. And I was really working for many, many years in the financial market, and technical and fundamental analysis were always a big part of my journey. So I was always interested in understanding the factors that influence the market the most, so that I could then be better in anticipating the price movements, because there are so many strategies out there and finding the right one can be really quite a challenge. So when I started my first job, it was in one international bank. I was on a trading floor, and trading was something that I was really always enthusiastic about. All the noise, all the market movements, all the news that are coming in and out. So it was really, really quite challenging to navigate through all the signals. But it was something that was always exciting me. So first I started to work on trading floors of different international banks. And then I also moved to asset management. And then 7 years ago, I co-founded SeasonX with my two partners, Christoph Zank and Dimitri Spak. And now we are totally into seasonality and we have found our niche. So, but when I first started to look into seasonal factors, the first thing that came across my mind were commodities. I don't know, how about you, Andrew? Have you also, what was the first thing on your mind when you started when you were looking into seasonalities?
I mean, it was always commodities, of course, because, you know, you're looking at weather. Items
Yeah, you're completely right. Actually, what is also quite interesting is, I don't know, did you know that actually seasonality can be also found in our daily lives? Every day we are encountering seasonality. For instance, I found some interesting study. This has nothing to do with the markets, but it has got to do with the partnerships and with the couple breakups. So for instance, there is also a seasonal chart on the couple breakups. When do they happen the most? Do you maybe know during the year? What is the
month? I know there's the 7-year itch, right? That whole thing. I mean, if it was me, I would think probably, let me just think about this. It's either people are too hot or too cold. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with February.
Actually, you're quite right. Not quite exactly the February, but maybe the springtime and also the April Fool's Day.
Oh.
And 2 weeks before the Christmas holidays. So it's very interesting trend because probably nobody wants to get to know the parents, you know, if this relationship is not too serious or something. So seasonality is really something where you can find everywhere. Or for instance, when you are buying a real estate, it's also interesting that the prices, house prices or apartment prices are much more expensive during the summertime than during the wintertime. It has something to do also with the psychology, because the people, when they enter the apartment, when they are showing the apartment, everything looks brighter and better in the summer. So the prices also go up and the demand is higher. So it's quite interesting. So it's quite interesting to see that seasonality is everywhere, not just in the market.
I mean, I can imagine with housing, you know, you have a house up in New Hampshire in the middle of the winter and it's like, you know, I don't know, 4 foot of snow, and then you got to trudge there. You're freezing your ass off. And then you get inside, you're like, you know, and you're just feeling miserable about the whole experience. Your feet are cold, they're wet, you know, and somebody offers you a little tea and you got to like get yourself. Versus in the summertime, you walk in, everything's in bloom, it's beautiful, jackets off, it's cooler when you get inside, not hotter. So
exactly.
I get it. So what about seasonality? I mean, when you talk about seasonality, how do we actually define that? Because when I think of seasonality, I think of things that can be looked at as repeatable due to something else. Like it's due to something, right?
You're completely right. There are like so many factors, and the seasonalities in the markets can be the seasonal patterns that you were speaking about that are recurring on a regular basis. They can be found in many more instruments than just commodities that we talked about before. They can be also found in indices, stocks, bonds, currencies, even in spreads, etc. There are many, many drivers that are driving these factors, fundamental or technical drivers, but also drivers as weather, psychological effects. We know also the Christmas rally or Santa Claus rally that is also quite profound. Then you have company earnings. That is also one of the seasonal events that takes place on a regular basis and that drives stocks or other instruments up or down.
But is there anything to be said about once a seasonal trend is identified and taken on by the masses, it kills it?
You're completely right. It can be. There are many trends that are not existent anymore. So I would say that seasonality moves every year. It's a little bit different. But there are like a couple of seasonal trends that are here over decades. For instance, we are now also in this sell in May and go away. We are now in May, right?
Yeah.
So this is one of the seasonal trends that that is really lasting for decades. Do you know what the sell in May is? Do you want to maybe say a couple of sentences about it?
Me? Okay, I like that. I like this interaction. My understanding of sell in May and go away was back in the day when people would start going on vacation, particularly in New York, and everybody would head out to the Hamptons and things like that, and traders were off the floor on vacation, and it was just a lack of liquidity, a lack of volume, lack of just anything going on, and it just would be just this lull in the markets. It's kind of like the lunchtime lull that is expanded for this. This is my understanding. I may be completely wrong. But then it go away. Then it comes back in, let's call after Labor Day. Everybody's like back on the desk, ready to rock. And then we get into the end of the year. And that's when the horses smell the gate in the barn and everybody gets going again. How wrong am I?
You are completely right, actually.
Oh.
May and go away. It suggests that the stock market performance between May and October is generally less profitable compared to the months of November to April. So, and you were telling me, okay, and this is one phenomenon that is existent really for decades. And I was actually looking at a couple of indices into the market, like Dow Jones Industrial Average, and I was looking at a seasonal chart of the last 25 years. And when I actually, when I see the seasonal chart in front of me, then I can see that the period from 1st of May till 30th of September is actually average return is minus 1.55% in the last 25 years. And that has reoccurred almost not every year, but in most of the cases. And also we have seen this trend reoccurring in 2021, 22, 23. But I would say that this selling may and go away, it's not so pronounced in the US like in Europe. If I take a look at the DAX, that is a German benchmark index, also from 1st of May till 30th of September, we can see the seasonal, not so good seasonal period. And we have an average return of the DAX minus 4.41%. It is very, very profound, not only in DAX, also in FTSE, but also across the Atlantic, in Nikkei and in other indices. So it is, the trend is there. It hasn't diminished over the decades. Already so many people know about it. But actually, there are many, this trend is not, you know, that something that is given that will appear every single year, because there are many, many, many stocks, not, I was just talking now about the indices that have indeed strong period during during May and September. And this is something that we encountered when we have decided to create this seasonal analytical tool that you were talking about in the beginning, in the introduction, SeasonX. So what I have actually seen is not that not only the indices have this seasonality period, but also the single stocks, or how I like to say, the single stocks have their own life cycle.
What I don't understand about that particular seasonal trend is that if I am correct in what I'm asserting, that the people are off the desk and people are on holiday, in the years past, that would mean no computer, no access, maybe phones off. You know, I didn't have a cell phone and I didn't have a at all. I didn't have a smartphone at all. I didn't have a computer that I could take with me. And back in the day when this all first started, that would mean that, you know, I was fully unplugged. That's why traders, they were just unplugged. Now, today, we have algorithms that are just trading relentlessly without anybody. And on top of that, the traders that are in the Hamptons are on their phones and can make trades and talk to their clients and do their stuff. So I don't understand how that particular trend has stayed over this time in the U.S. Maybe a little more vacation going on in a different way in the other place, but I'm talking about in the U.S.
I can see the seasonal trend still, and you're completely right. Now we have all these algo traders, etc. And actually, when I was looking at the S&P mini future, it's also very profound that the S&P mini future has also a strong seasonality intraday. So there are not just the seasonal trends during the year that I was now telling you about. There are also big seasonal trends intraday, intraweek, intramonth on different instruments. And you would assume that, of course, because so many people are trading the same pattern, that the pattern disappears, but that is actually not true. They're still here.
Yeah, you just, what you do is you buy in the open, you sell at about 11, come back at about 2:30 and buy then.
Exactly.
I mean, that doesn't take, honestly, that one doesn't take any genius. I mean, that you could do over and over again until a couple of times you'll get your face smashed pretty good. But generally speaking, that last, what, the golden hour, right? Is the play that people feel compelled for whatever reason, even on a Friday these days, which is weird because the pattern used to be that Fridays, even on long weekends into markets, was always a negative, like just lay off a little bit. Now people are just piling in on Fridays. Like what am I missing here?
There is always a fundamental reason behind it. Or, for instance, we can see also this trend in the dollar index. As we already know, the dollar index directly shows the trend of the external value of the dollar. It rises when the US dollar appreciates and declines when the dollar weakens. And we can see that actually there is from December 22nd until December 31st, there is a big seasonal trend where the dollar actually weakens at the year end. Do you know maybe why is that? And then we have the trend that the dollar reverses precisely at the turn of the year. Do you know maybe the reason behind this trend?
All right, this one you may have stumped me on. Let me think here. Dollar increases at the end of the year. Is that what you're saying?
U.S. dollar index.
U.S. dollar index increases right at the end of the year. I'm going to assume it has something to do with the treasury market buying some treasuries into the close of the year. I'm so wrong, right?
No, actually, you are not. It's actually strongly driven by U.S. tax legislation, the bookkeeping, meaning that many U.S. companies U.S. companies shift their money to the overseas subsidiaries to save on their tax liabilities by reporting small amounts of cash at the balance sheet date. And then from January 1st, we can see strong rebound again after the companies transfer sizable amounts back to the U.S. So the exact same price movement is also reflected then in the U.S. dollar rate.
Interesting.
So this a really, really interesting, actually seasonal trend. So the dollar index decreases by the year end and increases from January 1st.
What about this one? I think it's sell Rosh Hashanah, buy Yom Kippur.
I'm sorry?
Sell Rosh Hashanah, buy Yom Kippur. You familiar with that one?
No, I'm not.
Oh, but you can- I got the seasonal girl. I stumped her. So this is a trend. This is something about around the Jewish holidays where you sell the high holiday of the new year on Rosh Hashanah and you buy back on Yom Kippur like 8 days later. It's an 8-day trade.
I didn't know that one. Okay, this is very interesting.
Yeah, there's something. I'm not sure what the reasoning is. And I don't even want to speculate, by the way. But the point is, there's something there.
There are many events actually that are influencing the markets also that they can be called as a seasonal events, as a central banking decision, selections, I don't know, future expiry days, different holidays, like you mentioned one of them. Also Black Friday is a holiday, or different reports like Chicago PMI or consumer prices or non-farm payrolls, etc. It's also interesting when I look at the S&P 500, 2 days before FOMC announcement, normally it increases and then it decreases again after the announcement.
Yeah, whenever the FOMC speaks, it doesn't matter what they say. Everybody gets all juiced up.
That's also true.
Let me ask you this. In terms of seasonality, is there a, I don't know if you could say this, and this is not a recommendation or a suggestion, but is there one of them out there that's like, oh, that one. Yeah, I'd bet my full load on that one.
Well, there are so many of them. It depends on which asset class you want to invest. So actually, this was our first idea when we started our company. Because first, when Seasonex was born, we have had a worldwide cooperation with Bloomberg. We are still having it, and our analytical tool can be found on their terminals. But then a couple of years ago, we have started this analytical tool as a web-based version, so everybody can everybody can do this seasonal analysis by themselves. So what we did is the screener, because you are asking me now what is the best trade maybe, or what is the so there is no one best trade. I always like to diversify the portfolio. So, and for each month or for each day, there is a different stocks that are entering into the strong seasonal period. For instance, like you already said, this is not advice. This is just a trading idea. For instance, I was looking at the Take-Two Interactive Software, the company that is in the gaming industry. Right. And I have found a quite profound seasonal trend from May 1st till 25th of July. And if I look at this seasonal chart of the last 10 years, since 2015, for instance, we can see that during this period, from 1st of May till the 25th of July, this Take-Two Interactive Software made profit each year since 2015, and in average return was almost 19%.
You know why? Do you know why?
Oh, no, I don't know why.
I'm going to speculate.
Okay, please.
Kids are getting out of school. There's a lull between the time they have to go to sleepaway camp and they're sitting at home playing games.
It can be true. But maybe
just throwing that out there.
No production cycle of the company or something else. I don't know. But it will be also interesting to see, because Take-Two Interactive Software is now having, I think on the 16th of May, they're also presenting their quarterly results. So we will see once again, how will this trend reoccur also in 2024. So like I said, there is no guarantee that the seasonal trends reoccur, but I always like to say there is a high statistical probability. And I mean, everything that I'm discussing today, all of these indices, all of these stocks, actually, you can go to seasonex.com and you can look up more than 30,000 charts by yourself. And we have also, I don't know, did I tell you we have a new feature also?
Didn't tell me yet. Well, you didn't tell our audience yet. Let's put it that way.
That is a screener. So actually, you can choose any market that you want to invest in, from U.S. indices, from Dow Jones, Nasdaq, or S&P, or European indices, or even international indices. And then you can say, okay, I want to invest my money today or tomorrow, etc. And I want to look at the last 10 years. And I want to hold my stock for, let's say, 30 to 60 days. And please, with the screener, find me the filter. We have the filter function that the winning trades. For instance, if I put 90%, then I can see with two clicks, I'm getting the list that will show me all the stocks that are now entering from today into seasonal period, and that have actually had 90% of winning chance over the last 10 years. You can also take a look at the examination period of 10, 15, 20 years or however long into history do you want to take.
Very cool. Very interesting. So, you know, we talk about Sellers May. There's the, you mentioned the Santa Claus rally, and then there's other things, you know, that the January effect with small caps, you know, and you talk about various things with the dollar. So we can go from, I guess what you're saying is big, broad brush potential, I mean, presidential cycles, things like that, right? So that's coming up right now, the presidential cycle, in the election year. And then you break that down to incumbent wins, new person. Well, in this situation, an incumbent's going to win, it seems, like a former president and a current president. So each one was a president. So a president will win is the point here. And you know, you look at the seasonality there. What else goes into this? I mean, is there more? Is it other analysis? Is it like, okay, here's a great seasonal trade, I like that. Do you then look at charts? Do you look at fundamentals? That's kind of like off the table.
Actually, it's like quite different, because many of our clients are like asset managers or traders or swing traders, short-term traders, etc., intraday traders or long-term traders. So everybody looks at seasonality and have their own approach. Sometimes the asset managers go to our screener, and first they screen for the list of the stocks, for instance, it's S&P 500, and then they shortlist 10 stocks that are now, or 20 stocks, it doesn't matter, that are now entering the strong seasonal phase. And then after they have shortlist, they do the technical and fundamental analysis on top. Some of them do differently. They do a fundamental and technical analysis first, and then they do seasonality analysis on top of it. So it's like very, very different approach. You can also use seasonality as a seasonal factors, as an independent input factor. And what I like the most about the seasonality is actually that the seasonality is independent input factor, meaning that it doesn't correlate with fundamental or technical analysis. So it's another, how can I say it, informative way to see or to confirm or not confirm your decisions that you already had.
Now, is this screener that you're talking about, is that this the analytical tool that you talk about too?
Yeah, this is the part of the analytical tool. When you go to seasonx.com, you can go, you can sign up for free. There are 30 days free, so use this opportunity. So you have a different functionalities. You have like annual seasonality that I was speaking about, seasonality of different 30,000 instruments, annual seasonality of stocks, commodities, currencies, indices, even cryptocurrencies. And then you can take a look when is the best date to buy and to sell based on the seasonal trends. You can, this is the first functionality. Then you have, we have the second functionality that I was talking about. This is this event studies. And event studies is study actually the typical trend of an instrument around regular risk events like Fed meetings, labor market data, or triple witching day, et cetera, et cetera. So then you can see how the stock that you choose or any other instrument has a seasonal period. How does it react a couple of days or a couple of days after the event?
Right.
And then the third functionality that we have is the screener. If you don't know actually which stocks are now entering into seasonal period, we help you with the two clicks and we tell you, okay, these are the stocks for S&P or from Dow or from Nasdaq that are entering into strong and or short actually seasonal period. We have it for both for long traders and short traders.
Now, I have some friends that I know that look at a variety of different seasonal items, and they've gone so far as looking at, let's just say, solar flares and lunar cycles. Is that something that we pay attention to?
Actually, I have never, into my analysis, and when I was a portfolio manager, I haven't actually looked at it. But in our event studies, I think that we have also the opportunity that you can see how the stocks or other instruments react when their lunar cycle is there. But I haven't paid much attention to it, I have to admit.
Yeah, I don't think you should, actually. I just thought it was kind of crazy. But I thought I'd throw that out there because it's part of that. It could have been part of our discussion here. But I don't really understand how a solar flare. Well, I know people that do seasonal offsets. I don't know if you do that. You know, you're right. So it's like, okay, there was a seasonal flare that was, you know, happened on May 5th. And that means June 2nd, you know, 38 days later, there's usually a market sell-off. How does that even make any sense?
Yeah, I haven't looked at it. So don't
look at it. Don't waste time. It doesn't seem like something we want to really get involved with, you know?
But it's definitely interesting. I'm sure there is something in it. But like I said, I have to do a proper analysis to make some conclusions on it.
Let's talk about the five top stocks for this month and some things that we can talk about there.
The first stock maybe that I already mentioned is this Take-Two Interactive Software. Mm-hmm. What I also saw that is quite interesting is from the big ones is Netflix.
Yeah, tell me about Netflix. What is going on there?
Netflix is also seasonally, when I look at the seasonal chart over the last 10 years, it enters into a strong seasonal period from May 12th until July 16th. And that this actually strong seasonality has we have seen this strong seasonal trend since 2014. So every single year, if you bought Netflix on 12th of May and if you sold it on 16th of July, you would made on average 17%. Actually, last year we made just in 23, 32%. It's like quite amazing and quite profound seasonal trend on Netflix. So what is also
Can I stop you? I want to ask you something.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
So I get it how that's the best. That's the optimal. But if somebody was to buy it like a few days before or something like that, it's a little squishy, the exact date, right? Or not?
It is actually, our analytical tool is quite precise. So because of that, you should use it and see when is the best day really
so
to
it's,
buy.
It's May 16th. I wonder if that has to do with the same discussion I had about kids coming home and, having that time period between.
Maybe it's linked to it.
Maybe crazy.
Take-Two Interactive Software, like you mentioned.
Interesting. All right, what else you got?
One also interesting is something else from healthcare industry is Dexcom.
Oh, that's interesting because that got totally obliterated with the A1C GLP-1s.
So let's see what will happen now.
Whoa, it can't get any worse. I mean, look at the chart. I think it's DXCM, right? What absolutely obliterated. This is a company, by the way, just for people that don't know, a great company, great product, diabetes related. It has insulin, automatic, we'll call it automatic insulin pumps, I guess we'll say, call it that for type 2 diabetes. And really great delivery system. Really, you know, there's a couple companies that do this, but nonetheless, great, great company. Almost, I would say, is it a duopoly in the market? Maybe they have a big piece of the market. Well, once these GLP-1 inhibitors came out for the, you know, in whether it's Mounjaro or whether it's any semaglutide that in whatever form it is, right? You know, whether it's Ozempic or it's Wegovy. The thing is that all of a sudden people wouldn't need necessarily as much of this, or at least that was a perception of that for type 2 diabetes, because this regulated with just a shot versus having this thing installed in your body, checking your stuff, hearing the beeps, having to adjust a little up, a little down with the insulin. And this company got just trashed. So now what's the date range for this?
Date range for this is we have to wait a little bit longer, from 26th of May till 7th of August. Also, this company had a nice average return of 26%.
Wait, an average return of 26%?
Yes, average return of this last 10 years.
Holy crap. So, wow.
Yeah, a lot. So since 2014, actually 2014, we had a profit of 25%. Last year, the profit wasn't that much. It was 5%. But it's a nice average return for only 51 trading days, right?
I wonder what that is there. I wonder what that, I can't even imagine what that is. It's summertime something, yeah, something.
Call the CEO, yeah. And ask about election cycles, or I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, maybe new drugs. But what is actually what I, when I was in US back in the States in April, actually the topic that is, okay, Dexcom is one of the company, but the topic is now, that is now in everyone's mouth is longevity. So I would definitely also look at some companies that are in the longevity business.
You know, I like to speculate on why these things are, because you've been asking me, right? You've been asking me, why is this?
Sure.
So I'm going to throw this out at you. Okay, Dexcom, please. Ready?
Yes.
All these people, particularly in America, sitting inside their houses, eating all sorts of crap, stuffing their faces during the winter because nobody cares what they look like during the winter. And all of a sudden, they do so much damage to themselves, they get diabetic and they have to buy these pumps. That's what I'm going with.
No. It's definitely one way of seeing it.
Yeah. All right. What else we got? We got two more.
We have two more. So what else can I give you? Maybe ServiceNow. This is also in IT sector. I think that they're in cloud, right?
Yep.
Business.
Yep.
People know that better than I do. So they have also now a seasonal trend in May, from 12th of May till 23rd of June. And this stock had also had a consistent seasonal trend. The only loss they had in 2018 during this time, but it wasn't a big loss. It was the loss of minus 1.35%. So like I said, all of the charts and all of the stocks that we are today discussing, you can go to seasonx.com, just sign up for 30 days of free trial, and you should look at the charts by yourself, because there are like much more analytical data that you can from annualized return, reading trades, medium return, standard deviations, et cetera, that you can look at.
Let me ask you a question. You can look up a certain stock too, and it will tell you the seasonality of that?
Yes.
Are you on your system right now?
Yes, I am.
GNRC.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with June 1st.
Generic for holdings, right?
Generac, yeah.
Okay. So actually it has, okay, what do you think?
My guess is going to be somewhere in the, I don't know the exact time frame, but somewhere in the June through August.
From 12th of May until the 31st of July. Average return of 13%. When I look at the chart over the last 10 years, 2014 and 2015, the company made losses. And then from 2016 onwards, there were all positive years. And it is actually quite seasonal stock, because the annualized rest of this stock, so the performance in the rest of the months, is minus 3.52. So it has such a profound seasonality.
Yeah. So what was the end date for that one?
31st of July.
Yeah. This hurricane season is why.
Okay.
I've been buying this a lot of times every year, right about in June.
In June, okay. So it's also good timing to start in June. But like I said, the low is actually starts already in May.
Fascinating. And the nice thing about this in a really weird way is you don't really need to even know what a stock does.
Exactly.
You know, you asked me and you started off this discussion of, do you know why that is? The truth is, it doesn't matter. It's fun to know. It's fun to guess why it is. But truth be told, it doesn't really matter, does it?
No, it doesn't, because you can just do like seasonality, and this can be your only input factor when you are building your portfolio. But like I said, many traders or many portfolio managers like to confirm the seasonality with fundamentals and with technical analysis on top.
So let's talk about this. You enter into a trade. It's been good for 15 years. You're halfway through the time period and things just stink. Not working. What do you do?
Sometimes then I look at the fundamentals and technical analysis, of course, but it's really hard to say because sometimes I have seen many cases when you exit the trade and then in the end, the stocks moves once again up until the end of the seasonal period. So, yeah, but there is no, you know, there is no guarantee. Like I already said before, there is no guarantee. So because of that, it's very important to diversify the portfolio and to have like different sectors in your portfolio. So if one sector is going down, so maybe you will then profit from the other. Depends also how do you shape your portfolio. And are you a long-term trader? Are you a short-term trader? How do you do your allocation, relocation of the portfolio, et cetera? When we did, actually, we are doing also a lot of advisory for the different banks, and we allocate the portfolio on a monthly basis. So on the monthly basis, we change 70% of the portfolio stocks. Because there are enough seasonal stocks, strong seasonal stocks, that are entering the phase that we can then substitute with the ones that we are already having.
Great stuff. Seasonax.com, SEASONAX.com. Teja Marotovic, all the way from Vienna. By the way, are you a chicken or a veal schnitzel lover?
Wiener schnitzel, definitely.
Yeah, of course. Actually, people don't know. Maybe they don't know. That's where it was invented. And I've been to that restaurant where they invented it, where they double dip it, double fry it. Yep. I've been to the soccer hotel where they make the soccer tart. And of course, all the best hot dogs in the world on the street. Best hot dogs. Love it.
Thank you, Andrew, so much for having me on this podcast. And I would also like to offer to your your listeners a 30% discount if they then after 30 days of free period, if they decide to continue using Seasonax, you can actually put as a discount code INVESTOR3030 and you will get also additional 30% off.
INVESTOR30 after 30 days. Wow. You didn't even tell me about that before. That was a surprise, but that was nice. I thank you. My listeners, thank you. Go over to seasonax.com. Check it out. Teja, a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Have a nice evening.
Thanks. Bye. And that's going to wrap up the first show of May for the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Do yourself a favor. Check out all the things that we do over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You can see, of course, the show notes that happen, but as well as how we manage money for clients just like you. Seriously. If you're thinking, well, maybe it's time to look at some opportunities that are a little bit alternative to the regular mainstream investing, well, we have the TDI Managed Growth Strategy, which is kind of a long, short strategy where we can actually hedge out some risk and we can work on some trading and we can have some core equity, as well as our global allocations and investology. All of that, it's over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Thank you so much for joining me this week and every week. Next week coming up, we have Frank Curzio. There we go. We talked about him a few times today. Frank Curzio. We're going to go drill down to some of the things that are hot and some not. He has a lot of really cool things that we talk about when we get together. Thank you so much for joining me again. Have a great week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.